Is a famous area, which is the upside down nuns, the backwards nuns, the upside down nuns in Parshas Baalotcha. So if anyone's seen the Torah, or a Chumashim have it also, there's actually, normally in between different Parshas in the Torah, there are gaps. But you have in the middle of Baalotcha, in between two of these gaps, you have an upside down nun, backwards nun, in the Torah itself. Okay? And it's not clear, there's machlokas tanaim, which we're going to discuss tonight. What's the purpose of these backwards nuns? Okay? Between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. What's it teaching us? And there's a lot of what I'm going to say is grounded, I guess you could say, in a shir the Rav gave. Beautiful shir from the Rav on Parshas Baalotcha, which is written up and it's online, and it's, you know, if anyone wants to get access to it, it's readily available, but I can help you find it. But if you want to just hear a nice, beautiful Parsha share from the Rav on Chumash, he gave a nice thing on Baalotcha. So I'm going to talk about some of what he said, but you can't really do it justice. So the idea is like this, is that, so how does the Parsha go? Okay, so the Parsha, let's just get some context, okay? Or you know what? Why don't we just read the Gemara first, and then we'll see. We'll look at the parsha a little bit. Okay, so the Gemara is on Kuftes Vav Amud Beis and Shabbos, in the bottom of the page, second to last line. It says Tan Rabban Vayibin Soa Haaron Vayom Masha. So what's in between these two nuns is the parsha of Vayibin Soa Haaron, and it was in the Aaron. Aaron travels, Vayomer Moshe, and Moshe said, Kuma Hashem, Yefudzo Yvechav, Yenisim Mesanach, Mipanecha. Right? Get up, Hashem. Rise up, Hashem, and your enemies will like a scatter run away from you. Uvnucho Yomar, and when the Torah rests, and Aaron rested, Shuvah Hashem Ruvos Alf Israel. Hashem, return to the tens of thousands of the Jews. Okay? Fine. So, that's kind of cryptic, but it's talking about roughly like the traveling of the Aron. When the Jews were traveling, they had the Aron, and they had a certain pasuk that Moshe would be saying. Pesukim, he'd say when the Aron, traveled, and when the Aron rested. Okay, so the Gemara says like this: So Vayim Soron Vayim Moshe Parsha Zu Asulah Hakadosh Baruch Hu Simanios Milamaylo Ilamata. So Hashem made signs, simanim, before and after the parsha. Okay, to separate it off from the parsha which is prior to it and the parsha which is after it. Okay, why? Lomar, to tell us she'in zeh mekoma, to tell us that this is not its place. Okay, it doesn't really belong here. Rashi, she'in ru'u yilachkan, it's not really fitting for here. De'lav behilchos halilachos masos mishtoi ne'almina, right? Yes, it's not previously talking about their travelings. Ella, but the Golomais are really custody of Parshas Bamidbar. See, like, this really should have been in Parshas Bamidbar, where it describes the camps and the flags and how the Klal Yisrael traveled. That was in Parshas Bamidbar, two Parshas ago. But in this, it's not discussing that. It's discussing they're already on their way into Eretz Yisrael, and they're already on the move. Right? And it's too late. This really should have been earlier. So that's what the Braisa is saying. That's why are the nuns here? To teach us that it doesn't really belong here. It belongs earlier. Which begs the question, and what question is that?
Why is it here?
Mm-hmm. So why is it here?
Well, then why is it here?
Yeah, why is it here? Exactly. If it's saying it doesn't belong here, then there's an easier solution than just putting it here and putting nuns to tell you it doesn't belong here, just don't put it here. That would be easier. But that's not what Hashem did. And the Gemara is going to explain why. Okay? But obviously it's not fully explained quite yet. Okay, so that's the first Shita, which I think the Gemara is going to associate with Reb Shimon Gamliel, I believe. So it says, but Rabbi Omer, lo min Hashem uzan, no. That's not why they're nuns. No, that's not why. Ella mimnesha sefer chashav b'fnei atzma. It's to teach us that it is its own sefer. This parsha of Vayibin Soron Vayom Moshe, this two pasuk parsha, is its own sefer. Okay, Rashi. He says, Lomanashin Loza Hashem Shal Tami Asiman, right? That's not why it has this gap, the nun. The Mikoma who de Parsha Zu, Betchilas Masa, Shanosum Har Sinai, Airi. Oh, so he says, no, this Parsha really is, because this is the beginning of them traveling away. Although it's not the beginning of their travelings altogether, but this is like, this is finally, I'm sorry, this is when they're actually traveling away from Har Sinai. So this is basically when the Jews are finally ready to go traveling away from Har Sinai. So although it didn't describe it earlier when the Torah was describing how they would travel, this actually belongs here because this is when they were actually traveling away from Sinai. Right? So therefore it does belong here. So it's not the nuns are not to tell you it doesn't belong here because it does. So why are the nuns here? To make it a sefer unto itself. Okay, to make it a sefer unto itself. What does that mean? What does that even mean? So the Gemara explains, Kaman Azla Had Amr Shmuel Bar Nachman Amr Rav Yonason. So who is this following statement going according to? What does this the statement say? It's a pasuk in Mishlei, Chatzva Amudei HaShiva. He carved out its seven pillars. This is Elu Shiva Sifrei Torah. That's a reference to Hashem carved out the seven Sifrei Torah. Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar 1, 2, and 3, and Devarim. That gives you 7. Okay? Right? So, what are we talking about? So, Rashi explains. Zayin Sifrei Torah. What is Zayin Sifrei Torah? The Parsha Zu, this Parsha of Ayim Tzaharon, Sefer La'atzmo, its own Sefer. Nimtza, it turns out, Shel Maila, the beginning of Bamidbar until here, Sefer La'atmo is its own Sefer. Vishalamato Sefer La'atmo, and below it, the second half of Bamidbar is its own Sefer. Hol v'zeh mikoma, right, since this is its place, Nimsa Sefer Vayidaber Nechlak L'gimel Svarim. So it turns out the Sefer, which we call Bamidbar, is split into 3 Svarim. In other words, if this Sefer... If this parsha doesn't really belong here, so you imagine taking it out and putting it elsewhere. But if it does belong here, and it's its own sefer, so if you have a sefer in the middle of Bamidbar, well, what are you going to do with the before and after of this sefer? So obviously, those also become separate svarim. So you end up cutting Bamidbar into 3 different svarim. So it turns out, you have, instead of the ordinary chamisha chamsha Torah, 5 sefarim, it turns out they're really 7 svarim. Okay? Now you might be wondering, what's a sefer? So it turns out that in the Chumash, in the Torah, there are really 5 Svarim. In fact, what I mean by that is that in the writing of a Sefer Torah, between Bereishis and Shemos, or you could say between Vayichi and Shemos, there's a 5-line gap. So there are gaps, bigger than ordinary, between each of the Svarim. So there really is a halachic reality to Chamisha Chamisha Torah. There are 5 Sefarim. And each of them are their own Sefer. They're halachic nafkaminas. You're allowed to write a Sefer. You're allowed to have a scroll that just has Bereishis. You're not allowed to have a scroll just of a random Parsha on the Torah. But of the Bereishis, or Shemos, or Vayikra, or Bamir, or Dvarim, you could. And arguably, according to this Mandamar, the Gemara earlier said, you could have 7 Parshas, 7 Sefers, Svarim. There are actually 7 different Svarim. So why is it the nuns here? To show us that this parsha by Ibn Sauron, this 2 pasuk thing, is its own parsha, and it turns out it's an allusion. But the pasuk in Mishlei is saying there are 7 pillars to the Torah. This is the 7. These are the 7. Now, if this sounds surprising or strange, it is to me at least. But it's not just drash; it's a halacha. There's a Gemara learns out halachos from the fact that it's a din of a sefer. Namely, one that you could write it. The minimum sefer, the minimum amount of letters of a sefer is learned out from Vayeb and Soron, which is 85 letters. And there's a halachic nafkamina if the Torah's letters get erased. And as long as you have a minimum of 85 letters left, then it still has a Kedusha Sefer Torah. This is not just a drash. This is a halacha, which has nafkaminas, according to this position. According to Rebbe. This is Rebbe's interpretation of why the nuns are there. Okay? Okay, so let me just read a little bit more. Okay, a little bit more. It says like this. Is everyone following me on the pshat? I mean, I know there have a lot of questions to be asked here, but is there anyone not understanding what's going on here? Anything has to be clarified? Okay, so I'm assuming that means no. So there's a little bit more the Gemara will read, and then obviously it's hard to understand what's really going on here, and we're going to analyze it. So the Gemara says, Keman, Kirabi. Okay, so Man Tana de Paligola de Rabbi. Who's the Tana who argues on Rabbi? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says the following, and this is a statement which you might think on the surface, you might think it's heretical. Okay? It's going to be a question why it isn't, but you might think it goes against one of the Yesodos of the 13 Ikarim. Asida parsha zu shete akar mikan v'tikasev b'mkoma. This parsha, v'even so aron, in the future, is going to be uprooted from here, and it's going to be written in its proper place. Okay, namely, its proper place is going to be in Bamidbar, where the Degolim, where it tells you about the travelings. V'lama kasva kan. So why then is it written here if it doesn't belong here, and in the future it's going to be moved? By the way, I'll read in a second, but in the future means in Moshe Mashiach, it's going to be moved. So why did it write it here? K'dei lahafzik bein paronis rishono leparonis shniyah. In order to separate between the first paronis, the first bad thing Klal Yisrael did and was punished for, and the second bad thing that Klal Yisrael did and was punished for. Okay, paronis shniyah mahi. Paronis shniyah leparonis shniyah. Paronis shniyah mahi vayim kasoninim. Paronis rishono vayisim harashem. So basically, So basically, it's saying is the prior parsha was talking about the Jews traveled away from Har Sinai, and that was bad, and that was a sin. They traveled away. It's not clear what was bad about it. Some learn, the Ramban learns it means they like ran from Har Sinai like a kid running away from school. Or Rashi learns they ran with the intent of like complaining against Hashem. And then after this parsha, after this Vayivan Soharon, is another bad thing, which is actually two bad things, which is the Misonim, the Jews started complaining to Hashem, who could give us food. And then there was this Kibros HaTaiva, where they had this big desire for meat, and they were punished. So basically, it's saying is that there's a sequence of bad things that the Jews did for which they were punished. And in order to separate between two paranas, between two bad things and two punishments, so the Torah interjected with this parsha of Ayim and Sohara. Right? But it really didn't belong here, it really belonged in the Degalim in Parsha Bamidbar. And Rashi says, what does it mean in the future? See the parsha zu. La'asid, in the future, she'll call up paranas betelim, and all the bad things are going to be batal, are going to be nullified. V'lo yidagu leparanas. And we're not going to be worried anymore about bad punishments. The Yetzirah is batal, and the Yetzirah is going to be batal. Vasid lavo. So then, we're not going to have to worry about the Paranus anymore. And then, we'll put back this Parsha back to its place in Parsha Bamidbar. But in the meantime, in the pre-Messianic era, where we're worried about Paranus, the Torah put this Parsha, Ibn Saron, in between the Paranus and the Paranus, to separate between the two. Okay, so basically, bottom line, you end up having a machlokas. What are the nuns here for? Are the nuns here to separate off Ayyubin Saharon and to make it its own parsha? Its own sefer, and thereby to delineate seven sefarim, three in Bamidbar? Or do you say, no, that's not why they're here, but rather the nuns are here because to show you that this parsha doesn't really belong here, and it really belongs somewhere else, and the Moshe Mashiach is going to be moved back to where it was. And it's here now because to separate between Paranus and Paranus. But in Moshe Mashiach, we're not going to have to be worried about that type of thing. So then it'll be moved back to where it rightfully belongs. Okay, that's basically the end of the Gemara. Okay, so now I'm ready for any questions that anyone may have.
We know where the Parsha would go if it were to be in the correct spot.
No, I don't know exactly. I didn't really look. But it says in Bamidbar. Does it say exactly where?
The Ramban says exactly where.
The Ramban says exactly where?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It talks about, I mean, the whole Bamidbar is about when they traveled and how they camped, and this camp went here and this camp went there, and then, but I don't know. I'm not sure exactly. Maybe you can figure it out, maybe you can't. But I don't know if that's that significant. I don't know, why do you...
I
Like if you look at the Bamidbar Perek Beis, basically. Somewhere in Bamidbar Perek Beis. I don't know, the beginning, the end, the middle. But basically that's where it describes how the Jews camped and how they did the Degalim. And it would be, I guess, either in the middle, the beginning, the end, something like that. Maybe the Ramban says open.
I'm just wondering, like, why it would be moved from its original context.
Oh, well, it's saying the reason why it's moved from its original context is in order to separate between bad and bad, promise and promise, punishments and punishment.
But why would they do that through moving it? Why would they just, like, you know, put something else there, let's say? Why did they have to take something that already exists and move it?
Oh.
You know, the Ramban doesn't, the Rav said in his article.
Oh, the Rav said.
Yeah.
Okay, good question. I'm not sure exactly what you're going to do. If this is, there's a natural sequence and you want to specifically interrupt the sequence, so it's saying is you're taking a parsha which doesn't really belong here, but belongs somewhere else, and you're putting it here. But it's a good question is why you're choosing this parsha in specific to be your interrupter in between bad and bad. That's a good question. Right? What's the point of this in specific? I guess this isn't bad, this is good, I guess. Or why is this its own sefer, for that matter? I mean, this is... It's altogether hard to understand, right?
Also, why do we want to separate between bad things? I mean, just because they're both bad, is creating a separation between them going to change that?
Yeah, okay, good. Good, yeah, who cares? Who cares? Yeah, bad and bad. Big deal. That's what happened. Right, and it sounds like, what's this thing? Most Mashiach, we're not going to be worried about that. That's, I guess, a little bit of a clue. Like, it's because now, Rashi saying, we're worried about Puranas. But in Most Mashiach, there's nothing to worry about anymore, then it's going to be okay. And I was mentioning, by the way, the Yesod. It's one of the Yesodos that the Torah is not going to change. You can't change the Torah. The Torah is given me Sinai, and it's a fixed Torah. It doesn't lend itself to changing. So when you start changing the Torah, then you got all kinds of problems. Then everyone's going to start changing the Torah. This is the Torah, me Sinai, and that's it. So you might say, on the surface, it sounds like against that Yesod. But why, just on a plain shot, what do you think the answer to that question is? Why is that not a problem?
If it changes,
stuff it in.
Sorry,
I didn't understand the question. What's the question? The question is one of these, the Torah was given to Moshe, and it's not going to change, nothing about it is going to change. I didn't look at it inside exactly, but it's like it is the way it is, it's not subject to change. But this seems to be saying, the Gemara is saying, is it is, it's going to change. Yimotzei Mashiach, it's going to change.
We have all sorts of statements about Yimotzei Mashiach, don't we? About like mitzvot and which, you know, Kitzvei Kodesh we're going to keep and which ones we're going to toss out. It seems like once we hit Yimotzei Mashiach, that's like a new type of divine revelation that maybe we'll be able to, you know, override like whatever we had from the state that we're in now.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Like, that's, you know, that's, for example, I'll read to you, I mean, maybe other books of Nach are different. That doesn't prove anything, the fact that other books will be Nignaz. The Torah itself, I mean, here's the Rambam's ninth Yisod, Habitel, Sezu Torah's Moshe lo tibatel. The Torah will not be batel, v'lo tavo Torah me'es Hashem zulas. There won't be any other Torah, lo yitosef ba, v'lo yigra mimena. You won't add to it or take away from it, lo b'kasev, lo b'perosh, nor in writing or in explanation. Amar lo sosev, lo sigra mimena. So I think that's like this is an important yesod because that's kind of what the Christians and what other religions say. Look, God changed his mind, he changed it. The Torah was for then, but now the Messiah came and now it changed. But that's the yesod, is the Torah. That's like a lot of the debates the Rashba has with the Christians. Is that they have these questions. It says the Torah is going to change. The Torah changed already. That was the Torah, but now Hashem changed his mind, and now whatever. And the Rosh makes a strong point is that the thing in the Torah ever changes. It's not the Torah. Even mitzvahs of the Torah don't change. And there's all Gemara which says that maybe Kriya Shema instead, I think we did this once, but instead of saying, remembering Zichias Mitzvah Mitzrayim, they'll remember the Gula Asida. And the Rosh has a whole thing of showing why that's not really considered a change. Just like the mitzvah is to remember Hashem as a redeemer. So that's just another form. The mitzvah is the same thing. Remember Hashem as a redeemer. That's just going to be the ultimate redemption. So it's not really a change in the mitzvah, it's just a new instance of the way the mitzvah is expressed. So, something to that effect. But I mean, the fact that the Torah is unchanging, l'asid lavo, l'mas b'shiach, this, whenever, is a yisod, it's one of the yisodos, and it's an important yisod. Because it prevents other religions or other Nevi'im or anything else from coming along and changing the Torah's Moshe. This is the Torah who was given, and it's Shalem, and that's it. So I'm not sure what you were referencing.
Maybe then you could say that the nuns now will indicate to us like that this is a change that's pending.
Yeah.
Won't be considered a real change.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, I think that's the answer. Is that the problem with changing it is that you can't change Nevo'as Moshe Rabbeinu. But here, the nuns are written into the very Torah from Hashem. Like even the way the Gemara says, Hashem was also simanios. Hashem made them. This is part of the idea of having simanim is part of the Torah from Masorah, from Sinai. So it's like the problem with change is you're just coming along, Torah's written, and you're saying, you know what, God changed his mind. But here, it's built into the Torah itself that this parsha doesn't really belong here. It's a temporarily here, but I'll show you where to cut and paste the nun and the nun, and you take it out and you put it where it naturally belongs. So that's not the problem of changing. That's already built into the Torah that it's going to change. But if someone else wants to come along and say, the Torah writes that it's going to be everlasting and everything about it is forever, and you're just coming along, there's no indication of anything in the text, and you're just changing it, that's the Yisod. But here, it's built into the Torah that that's going to change. Yeah, good. By the way, just as an aside, the nuns, it seems from, we did some research in from the Masifta Gemaras, they quote a lot of different sources. It doesn't seem, this is the conclusion we came to, that so it wasn't open, and no one said this quite, but there's a lot of machloksim about exactly what's the Gemara just says, it doesn't say nuns, it just says simanios, signs. There are different shitos who held different things. Some held a very big gap, some held nuns, some held a nun this way, and then that way, different things, stars, all different types of things. It seems what the Masorah is that they're a gap, big, big gap, significant, some marker that this does not belong. That's so to speak, parentheses out the nuns. You know, some even I think want to say their parentheses. The point is that it's not the nun in specific, the upside down nun. It doesn't seem like that's an old Masorah that goes way back. Because that's Messianite at least. Because there's a lot of shitos. Nowadays, all the Torahs have the nuns, but it doesn't seem like that's an essential element of what exactly you use. But the fact that it's marked off as being different and set apart is that seems to be clear.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, please.
So for the first opinion, was that Rabbi who said that it's a sefer b'sneiatzmo?
Yes.
Does he have a reasoning for why this one, like if it's meant to be its own sefer, why it's not marked off the way that the others are marked off, and why?
No, that's a good question.
He's known instead.
That's a good question. No, he doesn't say anything, but that's a good question. Right, why not? If it's a separate sefer, then it should be like a separate sefer. It should just be Shiva Chamisha Torah, Chamisha Torah, or Shiva Shvi Torah. Right? Why is it? It's not quite. I mean, they're not really seven Svarim, they're five Svarim, but one of them is cut into three. Right? So, that's a good question. Why is that? He doesn't give any justification altogether. Why is there a separate sefer? And it's odd. To say that you have a sefer Bereish, sefer Shmo, sefer Vayikra, sefer of Ayibin Saron, Me'emur Shukon Hashem Ve'enuchel Yomar. I mean, that's a sefer. It's 85 letters. You know, well, how did that become a sefer? That it's not as action packed as the other Sfarim. You know,
Rabbi.
Yeah.
It seems strange. Like we hold right that. Every word in the Torah is intentional, right? That there aren't any extra or missing words in the Torah. And, or, if not words, in the very least large sections, like entire sentences. It seems strange that we would shift around the Torah, seemingly remove that sort of intentionality to convey some other idea. It seems like we're sacrificing the, like integrity of that idea.
Right. In order to offer
another one.
Yeah, so look, I mean, we don't understand why it's doing this, but I think the sacrificing would be to change the Torah. If the Torah is built in that it's meant to do this, then just like the Torah has many ideas encoded in it, this is one of the things which the Torah is alluding to by specifically leaving these gaps. It's anomalous, but it's an important idea which the Torah wants to teach, which we don't know what it is yet, and therefore, and we have to understand why it should be this way. Why is it that way, ultimately? But I think if we could explain why it is and what's the significance of it, then I don't know if it will be so bothersome anymore. But it certainly is out of the ordinary, and it needs a good explanation. Any other questions?
Do you mind repeating what the two tragedies are?
Well, it's not exactly clear, but I'll do my best. It's machlokas between the Ramban and Rashi versus the Ramban and Tosfos. But so the second one, I'll tell you that. The second one is the people who are complaining. Complaining to Hashem, Misonin and Ra. They're like making excuses, complaining. Okay? And Hashem got angry at them and made a fire sink and burn and killed a lot of people. And then afterwards they had the taiva. On the footsteps of the Misonin, then the rest of the people like started having a big taiva and saying, "Could you give us meat?" There's like we want meat, we remember all the fish in Mitzrayim and all that. And they're complaining about the man. So it's basically like, those are both after the Vayim Tzaharon. It seems to be two groups. Both some sorts of complaining, but they are identified as different groups. There's this Onanim and then the Kibros HaTaiva. The complaints about Hashem, complaints about being in the Midbar. They say, they were rushing. Oh, that's what they say. Chazal say, Rashi says that Hashem rushed them 3 days to get them rushed into Eretz Yisrael. Straight from Mar Sinai, rushed them into Eretz Yisrael. They started complaining, "My feet are tired, this is so long, we've been on the road." So they were, Hashem was helping, they were complaining. So there's basically, those are complaints. And those are both after the Vayivan Saron. Before Vayivan Saron, it just says, Vayivanan Hashem, it says, Vayisu Hashem, Mehar Hashem, Derachos Yom. They traveled from Mar Sinai 3 days. So Rashi, I'm sorry, the Ramban and Tosfos interpret that it means they were going, like Chazal say that as a medrash, it says that they left Har Sinai like a tina kabarech mibes ha-sefer, like a kid running from school. And Ramban interprets, he explains that it's like they got a lot of mitzvahs at Sinai and they were worried that they were going to get more mitzvahs. They were like running away so they won't get more mitzvahs. Like you'd think they'd be excited, but on the contrary, they were running away from Har Sinai. So because of that, that was a chet. And I forgot, he said there was a punishment also. Do you remember that, Ramban? Ramban said, what's the Puranas for that? There was some Puranas that, I don't remember what it was. But the Ramban had, because in theory, a Puranas is not just a chait, but it's a chait which has a consequence. So the Ramban showed that there's a consequence to that one also.
I thought it was the Mesonin first, so then it leads to Mesonin.
Maybe.
One second.
Yeah, okay, I don't remember. I can't find that Ramban now. But, oh yeah. Oh yeah, it says maybe if they didn't do that chait, then they would have, because they ran away from Sinai, Hashem didn't bring them to Eretz Yisrael immediately. That's what he says. That's a promise. Because of that, running away from Sinai, Hashem delayed their going into Eretz Yisrael. So that was a punishment. So that's the Ramban. That's the Ramban's interpretation. Again, the one beforehand was they're running away from Sinai and getting punished that they didn't enter Eretz Yisrael immediately, and then there are a series of complaints. According to Rashi, it's the one prior was not, it was them running away. It says when they left Sinai, they were like already mulling over this rebellion, which there were the complaints that they were going to have. It was like foretold. And when they ran from Har Sinai, it was like the beginning of them thinking about their complaint. So it's like they were leaving Sinai with the complaints in their minds. So they didn't yet express them, but they were like in their minds. And then there's the break, and then they have the complaints. Okay?
Thanks. Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so let me give you some background. I mean, I think this whole thing is very cryptic. I know for us, without the Rav, we wouldn't have been able to even approach this whole area. So he didn't quite take up the Machlokas and all that, but I think he was taking up the Pshat of the Puranas one, the separating between the Puranas. But he developed this very nice idea, and he brought out the beauty in this, or the beauty and the tragedy in this Parsha, of Parshas Baalosva. And his basic idea was, if you look at the Psukim, you could say that Baaloscha, with at this point of the nuns, is like a turning point in the history of Klal Yisrael. Okay? Because if you think of the history of Klal Yisrael, it's basically from Yitzhak Mitzrayim, they emerged, and they're moving, ultimately leaving Mitzrayim to go to Eretz Yisrael. And they got the Torah, and there's a setback of the Egel, but then they had Kapara, they built the Mishkan, and now in Bamidbar, they're setting up the camps. The Parshas Bamidbar is setting up how they're going to have the camps and how they're going to travel. And then in Parshas Baaloscha, they're starting to get ready, to make new carbon Pesach, getting themselves ready for entering Eretz Yisrael. And then they have, they basically do carbon Pesach, and then they have Pesach Sheni. And then they have the trumpets, which are going to tell them, you know, signal how they're going to travel, when they travel. I told them all the halachas of the trumpets. And then you have basically Moshe inviting Yisro to come with us. Okay, and the Rav emphasizes, he says to Yisro, he says, Nosim anachnu, we are traveling, El HaMakom Asher Amar Hashem, Oso Atein Lachem, Lecha Itanu, come with us, Ve'etavnu Lach, So he was giving him a personal invitation. Yisro, please come with us. We're going into Eretz Yisrael, this land that Hashem promised us. And he didn't say, Moshe didn't say, the Jews are going. He said, we are going. And they were going. 3 days time, they were going to be into Eretz Yisrael with Moshe at the head, the leader. He was like the Mashiach Hashem who set up Eretz Yisrael, the whole perfect system. And he was inviting them because at this point, there was no Chet of Moshe yet. There was nothing. This was going to be Moshe offering this. 1 second. Yeah, that's the Rashi says that. Rashi says that Moshe didn't know about it. He thought he was really going. In Parakapasa Chavtas, Yud Chavtas, Rashi tells us that. But it's open in the Pesukim. They were ready to go. Ready to go in 3 days' time. And Hashem was rushing them to get them into Eretz Yisrael. And this was going to be the climax of the whole Torah. Entering Eretz Yisrael, the promised land, this was it. But then, sadly enough, the Jews failed. And they couldn't handle it. They started complaining. Okay, whether you're with Rashi or Ramban, I'm just going to take one version of it. But basically, they started complaining. The road, we're going so fast, we're tired, we want meat. Taiva. Basically, it's like they couldn't. The chait wasn't anything particular as much as they just gave in to taiva. They just wanted meat. They wanted luxuries. They didn't want to be walking so fast. And whereas Hashem was trying to elevate Klal Yisrael to bring them up to a level, they were going to go into Eretz Yisrael and march into Eretz Yisrael. But basically, the people broke down, and they failed. And this. With this parsha was like the beginning of the end. Although they didn't have the Meraglim yet, but in the next parsha they did. And this was like a sequence, series of chataim, and they had the Meraglim, and they had Korach, and from here on in, the whole second half of Bamidbar is, this was basically, the whole second half of Bamidbar was basically the additional 40 years in the Midbar, which were added on. Ultimately, and that's why right at the end of this parsha, Moshe started complaining to Hashem, why do you give me these people? They're always complaining. What am I, like their nursemaid? So it's like the changeover from right before this parsha to the end was basically Klal Yisrael marching into Eretz Yisrael. And that's, I don't know if the Rav was explaining the Sefer, but I think it's very good, is that it's like, it's almost like the first half of Bamidbar and the second half of Bamidbar are two different svarim. There's the first half of Bamidbar was about to end, and the ending was cut off. The ending of the first half of the Sefer was when Moshe Rabbeinu marched them into Eretz Yisrael and set up the perfect society in Eretz Yisrael. That Sefer didn't end. It got cut short. And then it started a new Sefer, which is the Sefer of, which begins with Kivros HaTaiva and went for 40 years of the Chataim and the Meraglim and Korach and Pinchas and Zimri and the Bilam and Balak. All that was a result of this tragic chait, which was Klal Yisrael not being able to make it. And therefore, the separation of the Sefarim is like they really are two different Sefarim. Sefer Bamidbar 1 and Bamidbar 2. Now, but there's Bamidbar 3, right? So that explains why there's two Sefarim. But that's why the first half of it's like the first half of Bamidbar and second half of Bamidbar, it's like one story, but it became segmented, chopped in half, because of this tragic event in these Chataim. But even though there are two different stories, both stories, you might think, one's the good story, which leads towards Eretz Yisrael, and the other is like the not so good story, which leads towards bad and destruction. But I think that's why you need the middle Sefer. The middle Sefer is Vayibn Tzoron, Vayom Moshe, Vnucho Yomar, which is talking about Hashem's Hashkacha and traveling with the Jews. Hashem with the Jews when they're traveling, and the Aaron with the Jews when they're resting. And it basically is telling us that both stories end the same way, which is the Jews marching into Eretz Yisrael. They both end at the exact same end. It's just that one of them ends with... It's a different route. There's the three-day route where the Aaron is leading them into Eretz Yisrael, or there's the 40-year route, where because of their chataim, they have to be punished, and the next dar has to enter in, and then they're going to enter Eretz Yisrael. But either way, there's a parsha in the middle of the two Sefarim, which show that both of these parshios have the same, the common middle ground. The middle parsha is really the end of both of them. So on the one hand, they're vastly different. At the same time, their ultimate end point is the same. The 40 years in the desert were not years of destruction as much as years of preparation for entering Eretz Yisrael, to be able to accomplish Vayibn Tzoron and Vnucho Yomar adequately, and this generation was not up for the task. So that's why you have, it's like it is one Sefer, but at the same time it's broken up into three Sefarim, with the beginning, first and the last, and the middle one is like the unifier. That's the position of Rebbe, who maintains that it's that's why the nuns are there. The nuns are there to break apart the Sefer. Not the Prana side, just because of the Svarim, the three Svarim. Okay, so how are we doing?
Three Svarim?
That's why they're three Svarim. The first Sefer is...
He says that it's just like breaking them up.
Yeah, breaking it up into three Svarim. He says it counts like there are seven Svarim.
So both say that there are seven Svarim?
No, this is the one. This is the one who says there are seven Svarim.
This doesn't say that by Mashiach will be only five.
No. No, this one is not the saying that it's changing the Nemos Mashiach. This is just saying there are seven Sfarim, and there will and always will be, and this is where it belongs. The travelings belong here, because they were traveling, and they were going to travel with Aaron. And that's, you know, it belongs here. It's writing it here because they're about to travel. So it's not writing the Aaron when they told them about the camps. It's writing the Aaron where they're traveling, and they were going to. It belongs here. It just makes it into a different Sefer to split apart the two different Sfarim. Okay? Okay, is there a question so far?
I'm just still not entirely clear why it makes this middle part, this bridge that shows that the two Sefarim have this common theme. Why must that bridge be counted as its own Sefer? Maybe I don't even understand what the idea of a bunch of partial being grouped together as a Sefer is.
So I'm saying is like a Sefer is a set of stories or set of parashos, mitzvos, psukim, parashios, which have a common theme. So like Bereshis is like the Ramban kind of talks about the different, there's intro to each of the Sfarim he talks about, like Bereshis is like Sefer of Yetzira, the creation of the world and the creation of Klal Yisrael through the Avos. And then Shemos is Sefer Gula. And then I think Vayikra maybe is Sefer Kohanim or something like that. So they're different, you know, thematically related. Even though there's like units of structure within the Torah. The Torah is broken into Pesukim and Parshios and Sefarim and then the whole Torah. Similar to like the Rambam has Halachos and Prakim and Hilachos and Sefarim. So that's like there are levels of structure built into a book based upon its substructure. So Bamidbar, you could say, is the story of the Jews, I guess, traveling towards from Sinai towards Eretz Yisrael, something like that. But it's like because of the fact that the beginning of Bamidbar and the end of Bamidbar are so different. There's the Jews, the Yotzei Mitzrayim Jews, traveling into Eretz Yisrael at a high level, ready to go to approach Eretz Yisrael. That's one story. But then the whole rest of Bamidbar is a much sadder story, and it's also the Jews traveling to Eretz Yisrael, but it's like they're not, they can't be one Sefer, or the Sefer, I mean, it is, that's why it's not quite the two Svarim, because it's Bamidbar. But it's like Bamidbar itself had to be divided in half. And if you just divided it in half, then you'd just end up with two stories. And you'd think they're two totally different stories. But then you'd be missing the fact that even though they're two, at the same time, they're unified. And the unification of both of the stories is that they both end the same way. They're just different versions of accomplishing the exact same goal. And that goal is placed in them. How do you show that both of these stories end the same way? So in theory, I guess you could end them both the same way, or you could just put the parsha, which is the punchline of both of them, in between the two. So it kind of is bordering, it's a border of both stories, and it kind of shows that even though there's a new story, this new story is like a sefer unto itself, which borders the prior one, and it borders the later one, which is because it really is the commonality, it's a common feature of the two. So you want to create a border between the two stories, between the two books, which is one which expresses their common goal.
Like a transition?
Yeah, like a transition. You could say a transition. I'm saying it's more like a boundary, a border. A border is like related to both sides, you know, and it has a relationship to both of them because both stories, that's like, what's in common between both stories? Almost nothing, but what's in common? The relationship of, ultimately, their stories of Hashem rest traveling with and resting amongst Klal Yisrael. And then Klal Yisrael is at the proper level, then how does that accomplish? Through the beginning of Bamidbar. And if Klal Yisrael is a Chotim, then it's accomplished through wiping out the Chotim slowly but surely and setting them up and preparing them 40 years in the desert in order to prepare them to adequately be able to have Vayivin Sarah Mayim Moshe. But that didn't end up happening until later, until Sefer Yehoshua. But still, that's the goal of the second. The goal of the second half, this is the point. The goal of the second half of Bamidbar is not destruction. It's entering Eretz Yisrael. It's just a longer route to entering Eretz Yisrael. Because now they're Chotem and they have to be, you know, cleansed, if you will. Yeah. Okay, Devorah, did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks.
Okay. So, now the question is, what about the other mandamar, Rabbi Shem Gamliel, who says that the nuns and the Vayivin Saron is to tell us that this parsha doesn't really belong here. So why is it here? And why are you separating between the Puranas? Right? What's the deal with that whole thing, right?
And also, is the first half punishment, or is it...
It's not the first half, but the pasuk right before.
Oh, it's just two pasukim.
Yeah, it's two stories. It's the two stories which are one. Yeah, he's not learning the svarim. That's nothing to do with svarim. He's learning it's like there's Puranas before, there's a bad thing which they did, and there's a Che Onesh before, and there's a bad thing after, and Onesh. And in order to separate out between them, the Torah interjected with this pasukim. Not a sefer. He doesn't hold by the whole sefer thing.
But is there never in the whole Torah?
Yeah,
there
are other instances.
Stories?
Yeah, there are.
I'm sure there are no other two stories.
Good question.
And, you know,
are there no other two stories which are bad?
Corruption?
I don't know. Good question. Is this unique? Good question.
Doesn't
I know, that was my question. What about the Tochacha? The Tochacha is a lot of really bad stuff, back to back to back to back to back. Scary, scary, scary things. But that's, you know.
Maybe it's to show the complete, you know, huge, you know, tremendous downfall that happened at this moment. You know,
right.
Otherwise, much more significant than just a simple mizonanim. It was a change in their course and in their destiny. And that's going to be changed by the Mashiach because Mashiach is going to change history, and then at that point they will be back on the level that they're supposed to be on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Then why would it separate between the two punishments? Wouldn't it add another one on?
Well, maybe saying this is such a tremendous, you know, I guess pointing you to the fact that this is not just a regular Puranas. This is a great Puranas. That's why you have to separate it. Otherwise, it would be, you know, I don't know about otherwise, but just to point to the fact that It's a really significant one.
Okay. So let me add in some fact which might be relevant to us, okay, which you may or may not be aware of. So, because it reminds you of Rashi says, like, when in most of Mashiach, we're not going to be worried about Puranas, because there's not going to be Puranas and there's not going to be Yetzirah. So, there are the various halachos in Kriyas HaTorah, and express itself in Kriyas HaTorah, that when you end an aliyah, okay, when a person comes out to the Torah, you don't end it on a bad note, and you don't start it on a bad note, okay? Because it's like, and there's also a thing in the Tocha, like, so, yeah. So, there's basically, it seems like there's an inyan of that learning Torah in Klal Yisrael, it's Bitzibor, and people are sensitive, and people could become depressed, and it could impact people. Learning Torah could impact people. So, like, the Torah has bad things in it, but at the same time, you want a person not to be emotionally broken when they're doing Talmud Torah. And you don't want the Tzibor to be broken by the tragedies or the bad things or the punishments of the Torah. So it's important for us to know about the Puranas, and the Torah is not sparing about the Puranas, and we have a Tocha and we all that. But yet, in terms of their halachos, about how you start and stop aliyahs, that you don't do that with ending or starting with Puranas. Okay, and that seemingly is acknowledging the fact that people have emotions, and you don't want to break people, you want them to learn about the Puranas, but at the same time, you want them to go back into their life and be productive and not to become broken by the Puranas. So, you could say is like that, in a certain sense, a person who reads this parsha carefully, pays attention, and knows the history of how these events are unfolding, and appreciates the turning point, as the Rav so beautifully developed, the turning point of Jewish history, which occurred at this moment, it's tragic, and it's sad, and to appreciate Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is what the Rav, part of his thing, he said he would cry when he read those psukim. It was Moshe Rabbeinu inviting Yisrael to come with us in 3 days, and how this is the climax of Moshe Rabbeinu's mission and his life's mission, and he was there 3 days away, and all of a sudden, boom, the Puranas and the Puranas and the Puranas. And the beginning of the end. And then Moshe Rabbeinu is complaining to Hashem that these people are too hard, and it starts to unfold. So when a person reads Bamidbar, it's disheartening. You read it and you feel these Jews, they keep sinning, and they keep sinning, and they keep sinning. Hashem keeps punishing them, and they're punished. And it's scary, and it's frightening, and it makes a person have a certain, emotionally is broken by the din. And a person's worried about din. Say, could we do this? Could we handle this? We're in Galus. It's hard for us. The Puranas of Hashem is scary. So, the thing is that it could be is that, we live in an era of Galus, and we live in an era where we are subject to the Puranas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's scary to us when we see repetitive Puranas. In Yemos HaMashiach, we could study, we'll be in a position where we don't have to worry about Puranas anymore. We'll be able to study the Puranas and look back at the Puranas and appreciate the full brunt of the Puranas, and seeing how the din, one after another, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is punishing them, and you can make a limud of that, and study it, and see the full development of Midas HaDin, and how it unfolds through step by step by step by step. That's a great limud, but we're not ready for that limud. Klal Yisrael isn't capable of having that limud now, because we're in Galus, and we're worried about the Puranas. So Klal Yisrael is not able to appreciate the Puranas at this time. It breaks Klal Yisrael. So what the Torah did is that in the middle of the Puranas, right when it's starting to get going, right when the turning point and Klal Yisrael is about to go off of the path towards a lot of bad things happening, Hashem introduces the Parsha, which is an upbeat Parsha. The Ashkachas Hashem is with us. And don't be disheartened. Yes, there's going to be Puranas, but ultimately, despite the Puranas, we have a plan to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem is with us, and there's going to be the whole, how the Aron's going to travel with us, and our enemies are going to run away from us. So it's like, it in the presentation of the slow fall and din of Klal Yisrael, the Torah puts in like a good note. It would be like in the middle of a, you know, lahavdil, middle of a sad movie, bad, you throw in something to lighten up people's moods because it's too dark and it's too scary and it's too whatever. So it's like an upper. So it's like there's a reality of Klal Yisrael learning the Torah and hearing the Torah and being broken by the Torah. So the Torah did is it interjected a happy note. It didn't belong here, but it put it here for the sake of Klal Yisrael learning Torah. But in a sense, it dilutes the limud. Because if you really want to study Midas Adin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you don't want to break it up with the happiness, because that's not the way it really went down. That wasn't the way. The real Midas Adin is studied when you study it in its full brunt and its full force and the full step-by-step-by-step progression, and the pranas is contiguous. And that's why the Moshe Mashiach, the proper model of what Torah should be, is why Ibn Soron does not belong here. But we're not capable of having it that way currently. So the Torah did is it temporarily put in the nuns, the happy note, in the middle of it, with the notice that this is going to be moved. In a time where we'll be at a level, collectively be at a level where we're able to appreciate the Midas Adin in its fullest and to see the step-by-step, we won't have to have this upper. But it's so it's put in there, but at the same time with addendum, this doesn't really belong here, it's going to be there. The real full version of Torah is going to be later. This is here for the hearts of Klal Yisrael, who are not capable of being able to, you know, to study it in its full brunt. So are there other instances? This is different. This is a turning point. This is the tragic turning point of the Torah, which is harsher than, you know, as if you're thinking about how good things were and how bad they ended up becoming. This is scary, you know, scary for us in Galus. We might think we're in a good time in Galus. Imagine, you know, you're in a good time, and then right, we're about to reach have Yosef Mashiach, and then something. These things are scary for Klal Yisrael. This is not, it's not something. It's true, it happened, but at the same time, the Torah softened its presentation. Okay, any questions? I hope they're still there.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
In terms of like different bad things that happen, like I'm just not clear like why this particular, and I understand that it's a terrible turning point in terms of the history of Klal Yisrael, and really everything that has happened since then changed at, you know, started changing at this time. But you said before that we don't like start an aliyah or end an aliyah on a bad note. Like, is there something specific about this that, like, I didn't catch like the connection there, because it's not like the middle of an aliyah. Like, what's the connection?
I'm not sure I follow your question, but I'll try to elaborate. Is that basically this is the tragedy of the Torah, so to speak. The Chet HaEgel was a setback, but then Moshe Rabbeinu davened, and the Jews were still marching on, and they were still going into Eretz Yisrael, and they were back to Lama Hashem, so it was bad, but at the same time, we were back up going into Eretz Yisrael, Mishkan, all that. But this was the end. This door, which was 3 days away from entering Eretz Yisrael, ended up being dying out in the Midbar over 40 years. And Moshe Aaron and Miriam along with them. So this is a tragic turning point in the whole story of the Torah. And as such, the Torah softened its presentation of it by interjecting with, don't worry, things are going to get bad now, but we're still going into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem is going to be with us, and Kivay Mitzah Kuma Hashem, and our enemies are going to run away from us, and Hashem is going to dwell amongst the, you know, all of Klal Yisrael. So, I'm using the Aliyah thing to show that there's the Torah in the Halachos. That's more like in the Halachos of laning, there's a sensitivity to Klal Yisrael's emotions and the way Torah impacts people. This is a little bit different because it's not only in how we do Kriyas HaTorah, but it's in how the Sefer Torah is written. But I'm saying it's the same type of a point, is that the Torah and the halachic system have the psyches and the emotional impact of how the Torah will affect Klal Yisrael beyond just the abstract Talmud Torah, there's the reality of how the Talmud Torah will be internalized by people who are listening to it and hearing it.
So it's almost like it would just be too much if we didn't have, like, preemptively, okay, it's about to get really, really bad.
Yes.
It is really bad.
Yes.
If it didn't, we didn't have this preemptive, there is a something coming good at the end.
Yes.
It would just be too much for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, it would be like sometimes you may tell someone a story. Okay, I'm going to tell you a really story, scary. A really scary story. But just know there's a good ending. Okay, now let me tell it to you. You know, so it's like, you know, you wouldn't say that to the person. The person would be, you know, they'd jump out of their seat listening to you. It's too scary. You say, don't worry, I'm okay, everyone's okay, but now I'm going to tell you really bad. So it's like you start the bad story, but then before you really get underway, it interjects by saying, don't worry, Hashem is with us, our enemies will run away when they're on travels. So that kind of, it allows us to have a perspective, you know, a happy note, so to speak, when we're reading through it. Which is a compromise to our emotional nature. It's not the way it should be. And when you're studying it, Lasid Lavo, we're going to study it in its full form, because then you get a higher appreciation of the Midas Aden. You don't have a watered-down version. But this is what's necessary for the Jews in Galus.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? Okay, so again, I would recommend anyone to read that article from the Rav. I'm referencing it, and he really presents the drama. I mean, you could see, I mean, if you listen to it, it's even better if you could deal with his accent. But he really presents it. You hear the Rav's, you know, beauty as a speaker and, you know, as an orator. It's beautiful the way he speaks and his voice and his whole thing. But even if you read it, it's also good. It was sent out actually on the website, on the yeshiva email list this past week. It was in Art Marshall's email for the Shabbos, but it's also online. It's like called like Leadership, Bahaloscha, the Rav, Bahaloscha. It's a famous year. So it's a good read. The read in the one he sent out is like 14 pages in the PDF or something. So, you know, it's not super long, but it's, you know, really, it's amazing how he takes Parshas Bahaloscha and unifies it into this one unified picture. So again, this is, you know, I'm only touching on the main point. I'm touching on the main point he said, but he does it very nicely. All right. So, you know, it's interesting because we don't notice this. It's like pshat in the parsha, but it's like you don't notice it. You know, now that you point it out, you see it and you think about it, you know, but the Rav really drew it out. But it's with the Rav, you see what this Gemara is talking about. Yeah. All right. So have a good night, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.